Every human being has a longing for belonging. We all want to feel loved, accepted, and validated. We want to believe that our lives matter. Deep down, we want to belong to something bigger than ourselves, to feel the power of community. We want to make a positive difference, and we choose the place where we want that to happen. Welcome to the Real Time Roots podcast. I'm your host, Christielle, and this is my co-host, Sarah. At Joy Believe, we help you grow your own food and remedies so that you can create health and wellness for your family naturally. Today, we're talking about belonging and putting down roots and the things that make you feel like you belong to a place. So, obviously, the place where you are living right now, your location, is based on things like where you could find a job or the school you wanted to go to or where the housing prices or rental prices are affordable. Like tree roots, where there's access to water, soil, and sunshine, we root where there are things that we need. Do you think that's true, Sarah?
I think it's true for many moves, especially for young families. And sometimes for older generations that want to move closer to where their kids and grandkids are living.
So sometimes family becomes a reason to move.
Yep, family and jobs seem to be the most frequent two I encounter as people's reasons for upping and moving and asking for advice for moves.
It's interesting because when a city wants people to move to their area, those aren't the things they talk about. They talk about usually how good their place is for business, or how they rarely talk about housing itself. They usually talk about, you know, recreation opportunities or those kinds of things to attract people to move to an area. But in reality, it comes down to where you can make a living.
Yep, and sometimes the decision-making process is a little different. Sometimes people buy where there's a donut store.
Really? A donut store?
Yeah, Mobetta Farms made the decision of which farm they'd buy based on which town had the better donut store. And then the donut store in town closed down after they bought.
So I think another reason people would come to a community is because their friends moved there, wanting to be close to their friends. That happens when, especially I think more now that people can work online and where they live isn't so important.
Well, yeah, if you have an online job that lets you move around, then you might move where you have in-person friends. Or you might have a lot of online friends and no in-person friends.
I think friendship is really important because friendship makes you feel like you belong in an area. And it's easier to bring friends with you than to make new friends. So when a location is less than ideal, can you grow roots there? Or do you have to move to a location that's the best before it's reasonable to put down roots?
Well, there's a saying that if you aren't happy where you are, you won't be happy where you move to.
Because happiness is
a state of mind.
A state of mind. Do you agree with that?
Sometimes I think you have to put forth a genuine effort to grow roots into your community and your location before you can genuinely determine if the community is just not right for you or not. So making friends can be a way to form roots within a community, or other ways can be volunteering or contributing to the community in another way. And of course, volunteering to be part of something in the community could be the way to make friends.
Now, on the way to the studio today to record this podcast, I was talking to Mr. Joy Blee, and we were noting that we have been in this community now for 20 years, which is as long as we lived in the last community we were at. And I jokingly said, so is it time to move after 20 years? And so I think that the longer you're in a community, the more roots you put down and the harder it is actually to move. Now, a lot of people would look at their house and go, 20 years, there's 20 years of stuff that we've accumulated. That makes it really hard to move. But even beyond the amount of stuff that you have to pack up and move, there's also the fact that you're leaving friends that you've made and relationships that you've made. And you always think, well, we'll still be friends even if we move. But when I look back to the people that were my best friends 20 years ago, well, honestly, a lot of them have passed on now. But I'm not even sending Christmas cards to them anymore, that the ones that are still around, we no longer have the same interests or the same kind of circle as we had when 20 years ago when we moved. And so you do need to make the effort when you move to a new area to make friends, to connect with people. Do you agree?
Well, it's part of growth. If you're not growing, then you're not changing. And part of growth and growing roots is how you interact with your friends and with the community, or making friends and building community. If you want to see something happening in the community, then maybe you need to start it.
I think that's a great suggestion. I think it's really important to kind of be the change you want to see. If there's something in the community that you want to see happen and it's not happening, you can be the catalyst to get it started. So from what I just said, do you think it's okay to stay in the same place for 20 years or 30 years or 40 years, or is it better to continually move?
Well, it depends on what's going on around you. Because if we go back to trees, willow trees or other smaller trees often don't last 20 years. The oaks last 150.
So you're saying that if you stay in a community for a long time, you become an oak if you started out as a willow?
Well, you end up with pillars of the community being people who've stayed there the longest. They end up knowing a lot of the newer people, being able to help people who are newer, and making a lot of acquaintances and friendships as they go along. So it depends on your purpose in the community.
So it's okay to not move.
Of course it's okay to not move. Moving's expensive.
I think the other thing is younger families tend to move more often.
Yeah, find a spot to settle.
Till they find a spot to put
or
down
because
roots.
Because the rentals keep changing.
Yeah.
Once you're actually buying a house, then it's a lot easier to settle down. When you're relying on rentals, though, it's really hard to set down roots, at least in a specific house.
Right, right. Yeah, I remember as a child, we were renting, and we moved every 6 months. It was, and then actually moved cities every couple of years. So it was hard to make friends. It was hard to feel like you belonged in an area. I grew up all the way through high school feeling like I didn't really belong anywhere. And I think once you start setting down roots, that feeling can stay that you don't belong. Because you're changing, you know, you're going to school and you're changing friends every year because you're getting a new classroom, and it can feel like you don't belong even when you have a permanent location to live. So it's not just where you live, it's also what's happening in the rest of your life.
Which is why maybe not moving frequently when you have young kids might be a good idea. But at the same time, if jobs or other situations require frequent moves, then maybe it's better to make the major move sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. We had to really think hard when our kids were in high school about whether it was a good idea to move. And for us, it ended up being a safety issue because there was young people in our neighborhood where we were living that were pulling guns on each other in front of us. And so that kind of cinched it that we needed to get out of there. But if that's not a situation that you're in, if it's not a dangerous situation, then it's worth thinking it through how that's going to affect your kids.
And now with all the development in that area, it doesn't look the same either.
So how important are roots? I mean, there are people that say that roots don't matter and it's okay, you know, the nomad lifestyle where you travel and you meet people, and that roots aren't important. But I think that it's a good idea to look at history, because often your roots can stretch back a long ways. And there are people, you know, right now even going on to Ancestry and looking up who was my mother, who was my grandfather, and trying to establish roots. Because I think, especially in North American culture, we have been cut off from our heritage, and people are trying to get that back.
That's a very good point. A lot of our focus on roots actually comes from focusing on our ancestors and what their cultures were before their families came to the shores. So things that we have with festivals, Christmas, that started in the old country. Halloween or All Saints Day, that started in the old country.
Bobby Burns Day.
Bobby Burns Day came from the old country, so did St. Patrick's Day. And a lot of our traditions surrounding Easter and some of our other holidays also came over from the old country.
So my mother was, she was born into a family where her dad was Scottish, Stuart clan, and her mother was actually Canadian, or sorry, not Canadian. Her mother was actually French. And when she cooked a roast, she always put in a couple of sticks of celery, a couple of carrots, and a couple of onions. And that would be like, you know, maybe once a month we'd have a roast on Sunday. And I always thought that that's just what you do for a roast. You put in carrots, celery, and onions. And I learned recently that that's actually a classic French cooking technique called mirepoix, where you chop up carrots, celery, and onions, and all sauces and soups and stocks start with that mixture. So that came right from my mother's mother's French roots. And so I did it too, of course, because that's what I saw my mother do. And that's an example where you're doing something, but you don't actually know why you do it. You do it because your mother did it. She does it because her mother did it. And it actually comes from classic French cooking.
That reminds me of a story I've encountered online where whenever the family was cooking the Christmas ham, they always cut off one end. And one of the kids asked the mom why she did it. Oh, well, I did it because my mom did it. Well, mom, why did you do it? Oh, I did it because grandma did it. Oh, grandma, why'd you do it? I did it because the pot was too darn small.
Right. A tradition, right? In this case, though, with mirepoix, it is part of the cooking technique. And I think a lot of the food that our grandmothers and our mothers cooked, that gets passed on because what you like about the cooking, not liver, what you like that your parents cooked, that becomes part of what you cook for your family too.
Well, if you only take the parts of the cooking that you like, you could be missing some very healthy dishes.
Like liver.
That you might actually like with adult taste buds.
So my mom cooked liver because it was cheap, because it was a cheap food. We had liver once a week at our house when I was growing up because it was cheap. Now liver is not cheap. Now liver is a very expensive meat that is considered gourmet.
Maybe only if you make pâté out of it.
That's what they do with liver.
It's still cheap if you get it from the farmer.
And if you want to know more about that, listen to our episode about buying local. So we were talking about traditions, Christmas traditions, Easter traditions that are part of our roots that come from our ancestors. And I brought up the example of the mirepoix. But when we cook for Christmas, some people will cook, like, for instance, a ham. Some people will cook a goose. Some people will cook a turkey. And it has to do a lot with what culture you come from. The other thing that is very traditional is what kind of cookies your family cooks for Christmas. Some people do shortbread. Scottish people do shortbread. You might do sugar cookies. You might do pizzelle. You might do
butter tarts. My favorite. Oh, wait, that wasn't a cookie.
It's not just your friendship, but it's also the food you eat and the things you do that are traditional. And so oftentimes when you have just moved away from an area, you're starting to put down roots, you forget that you have some roots already in your family traditions for holidays.
And maybe you're moving away from certain family traditions because you want to make the holidays your own, or you want to merge them because, well, maybe someone just got married and they're wanting to merge the traditions of both families. So that can cause some chaos and upsetting if there's a lot of flux. And so a lot of conflict can happen at holidays because of the underlying discomfort and the changes and shifting in expectations, especially if you're merging traditions during the holidays.
I think that it's totally okay to take the things of a holiday that are important to you and take the things of a holiday that are important to the other person, your spouse, and to both of, so that both of you can feel comfortable in your roots. It doesn't have to be either or.
And once you get comfortable in your new traditional traditions, then there's peace.
If growing some of your own food sounds like something you're ready to do right now, I've got the perfect next step for you. My Fill Your Salad Bowl workshop is a concise workshop that will show you how to grow enough greens to fill a salad bowl every day. That's a great first step, just to fill a salad bowl. It's not overwhelming and anyone can do it. You can do it even if you don't have any land, even if there's 3 feet of snow covering your garden, even if you've killed houseplants in the past, and even if you don't think you have a green thumb. Here's what we cover in this workshop. Now remember, it's a concise workshop. It's not going to take a long time to go through, so everyone's going to have enough time to do this. You'll learn 3 different salad green growing methods that you can implement right away. You'll learn the exact methods I use to keep my salad bowl full so I never run out, even if I have unexpected company. You'll also learn where to cut costs and still be successful growing salad greens at home. You'll learn the ideal equipment to use if you want to grow greens faster and easier, the unique pitfalls to avoid with indoor and container growing. You'll learn how to save a crop that goes wrong, where to find organic seed at reasonable prices, how to store your seed so it stays viable for years so that you can save money now on bulk seed purchases. And you'll learn the health benefits of sprouts, microgreens, and healthy greens and how to optimize these benefits in the way you grow them and the way you store them. We'll also give you 17 ideas for using homegrown salad greens in the kitchen so they never get mundane. If you're ready to start growing some of your own food and you think salad greens are a great place to start like I do, check the link in the show notes. We're talking about how important our roots, and I want to talk a little bit about mind control techniques. Because what can happen in a mind control is a cutting off of roots. It's much easier to manipulate somebody if you can make them think that their roots don't matter or cut them away from their roots. For instance, not letting a person talk to their parents or telling them their parents don't care about them so that they don't try to connect with their parents, or cutting off from other traditions like cutting off friendships or cutting off Christmas or Hanukkah from them. That is one way that's used to do mind control. And so I want people to be aware if someone is doing that to you, because without roots, people are more easily manipulated and controlled. We saw that with the COVID lockdowns, where people couldn't go, like in Canada, during the COVID lockdowns, we were forbidden to go celebrate Christmas, Thanksgiving, any of the holidays, Easter, with our families. Family gatherings weren't allowed, weddings weren't allowed, funerals weren't allowed, or there were very limited number of people. And so being separated from those traditions makes it easier to control people.
And the removal of joy can also contribute to the ease of control.
And what you're saying is that those traditions do bring joy.
Yeah, our traditions, our friendships, our roots all can bring joy. And if someone you're hanging out with as a friend doesn't bring joy, maybe they're not a good root to have.
Rooted people, on the other hand, are much harder to control. People that are very comfortable in their traditions, comfortable in who they are because they know where they came from, those people are very difficult to control.
Roots provide a shared pattern of values and morals. They provide like-mindedness. It also provides shared language, sometimes vocabulary, sometimes just different language and colloquialisms.
And that's one of the things that people who are trying to abuse or control or cults will do, is change the vocabulary of the person. You might even notice that right now in popular culture, they'll try to change word definitions so that what you think it means isn't really what it means now in modern language. So we have examples of a woman is no longer a woman. The word mother isn't allowed to be used. We have to talk about parental persons rather than mother and father, those kinds of things. And it's a way of cutting off roots. Roots also provide metaphors that people agree on. You could think of it as an inside joke. You know how people say, oh, it's an inside joke. You're not expected to understand it because it's only understood between a couple of people or in a certain group. And I think it's important, too, that as we're talking about roots, that we also think about the next generation, the children, the grandchildren, and provide them with patterns that can give them the roots that seem to be so fleeting in our society.
And the ability and skills needed to develop roots wherever they end up moving to, whatever jobs they end up taking, and whatever life in the world ends up throwing at them.
So we've been talking really generally about roots, location, roots being where you live, your proximity, and also your family background and the people you surround yourself with. But let's talk specifically about how to develop roots if you're feeling rootless.
Number one, choose to take root in the area you're in and work on finding your tribe, also known as like-minded people who share interests and values with you.
And knowing that your values might change as you get to know people.
And sometimes if it's a shared interest, it's not always shared values. And sometimes if it's shared values, it's not always shared interest.
And that's okay, because mature people can move within a circle of people that aren't the same as them.
Exactly.
Another way to choose to take root is to offer hospitality. There are a lot of lonely people out there, and everyone needs friends. And you can invite people into your home, especially people that can never invite you back because they don't have a situation that will allow them to invite you back. It's great to have hospitality, that even if it can't be reciprocated. And that can be something as simple as having someone over for a dessert. In fact, things like a brunch or dessert or just coffee are really low key and don't require a lot of you other than just opening your home.
That's a great idea, Chris. Another thing is choosing to accept and embrace healing. Let your heart be healed. If you're feeling maybe ostracized or that you don't fit in, sometimes we internalize those feelings and we don't actually let anyone in.
That's a good point. It's important. Sometimes it takes time after you've been hurt before the healing can happen. Kind of you got to let the scab harden over. But then there comes a time when you can say, okay, I'm ready, and open your heart again. I think the other thing that's helpful is when you're living in community to take on part of that community as yours, to say, this is the area I'm going to be responsible for, whether that's maybe being part of a neighborhood watch group to watch out for the kids to make sure they're safe, maybe picking up garbage on a stretch of the road, maybe taking care of the neighbor's dogs, maybe helping out in a volunteer group in the community, maybe the local soup kitchen, or Sarah, for a while you were involved in doing the food reclaim at a local church. You want to talk a bit about that?
Well, the food reclaim had different people coming in each day to volunteer. Sometimes they'd only be able to volunteer for one day, and sometimes they were coming every week. So you had a bit of community with the volunteers. And of course, you had free food going out to the local soup kitchen as well as the local food bank. And you had community among the volunteers and sometimes free food going home with the volunteers.
And I think that's great, because in that case, the opportunity to volunteer is already established and you can just plug into something that's already going on rather than having to create something yourself. So great if you're new in a community to get involved in those things that are already happening in the community.
Oh yeah, and the volunteers usually have lunch together each day.
So that's a great way to make connections. I mean, there's other things too. Church is one way, but there's also community groups, clubs, and another great way to set down roots is to actually go out to the local coffee shops and see who shows up. If you show up the same time every week at the local coffee shop, you'll end up seeing the other people that show up the same time as you and start to make connections that way.
Or if you have something in town like a board game cafe, you can always ask what groups meet and what time. And then just join up with the one that interests you the most.
Another thing about choosing to take root, a lot of it's about friendship. And you often hear the adage, if you want to make friends, you need to be a friend. And I would go one step further and say that you want to work on yourself. You want to become the person that you need to be the friend that you want. So what that means is to look ahead and see, who do you need to be in 2 years to have the kinds of friends that you want to have in 2 years? And then work on yourself to become that person now.
And that also means don't just make friends and then try to stick with them. Because sometimes the type of friends you make aren't the type of friends you want to keep. So be willing to make decisions if you feel that a certain person is taking advantage of you being a friend. They may not be the best friend for you.
And then when in doubt, I think that it's important that we, one, love ourselves, and two, love our neighbors. Always default to love. I don't think that, you know, if you ask yourself, what would love do, and then do that thing, I don't think you can go wrong.
Yeah, but don't listen to it if it says you have to put up with a bunch of BS. Or put up with somebody who's maybe trying to cut you off from your roots or your other friends.
As we said, you want to be aware of what the mind control abuse cult is and what they do. And you don't want to get lost in there. You don't want to be gaslit.
Yep.
But the majority of people are not that. The majority of people are kind and loving and just want to be friends. So we've been talking about the importance of location, the importance of where you live, and if you're feeling uncomfortable where you live, how you can find the roots to make yourself more comfortable. In the next episode, we're going to be talking about hygge, which is a coziness that comes from Norwegian culture, and it's how they find joy and happiness, coziness and belonging or roots as the year gets darker. And I think that that fits right into our talking about how important location and roots are. So in this season of the Real Time Roots podcast, we're talking about home and how to feel at home, where you are, and how to make your home more enjoyable and comfortable. So that's kind of the theme of this, talking about location, and then next week talking about hygge, and we'll talk more about that. But before we leave you, we want to leave you with one positive action that's super easy to do that will help you increase your feeling of rootedness in your own community.
Our positive action for this episode is to do something to increase your feeling of rootedness in your community, whether that's inviting someone over, joining into an existing group meeting, doing something you love, like knitting, board or card games, writing, or even just a coffee group meeting. Or, if you really don't like any of those ideas and you really don't know anyone in your community, going down to a local coffee shop and try to find yourself a new hangout space where you can people watch and slowly start getting to know people in your community.
I wonder if you could go to a coffee shop and hold up a sign saying, looking for friends.
Well, you could stick up a sign that says willing to chat. I've heard of people doing that.
Really? Did it work?
I don't know. I've never tried it. I always just end up talking to people while I'm waiting for my coffee anyway.
I think that would be a great experiment to have a sign on the table just saying willing to chat and see who will sit down with you. That'd be fun.
Well, if you do it with a baby or a really cute puppy beside your table, I guarantee people will stop.
Lots of good ideas today. I hope you found this helpful. Thanks, Sarah, for joining me today. Thank you, listeners, for joining in. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And as always, please like and subscribe. Talk to you soon. Bye.